Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Extra Turns. I'm your co-host Coburn, here with
Alex.
And we've got
and everybody else is sick.
Yeah, everybody else is sick. So it's just us today. Alex, would you like to start us off with Turn Zero?
Yep, sure. Turn Zero wanted to advertise channelfireball.com. They are actually having a huge sale this week. They're calling it a yard sale, and they have a bunch of stuff on sale, including booster boxes at about $80. So go check it out. They're also, you know, hosting Grand Prix Las Vegas. So that's pretty
super
important.
Super excited Grand Prix. That.
So super excited. So yeah, go check it out. Channelfireball.com.
All right. Well, with that, let's move on to turn one. So we missed out recording last week. We did record a show for you guys, but it ended up getting lost due to technical errors. So we're going to skip a couple of GPs and talk about GP Miami, which happened this past weekend. It looked like a very exciting standard tournament with some different decks making it into the top eight. I guess, Alex, do you mind if I go ahead through the top eight list?
Go for it.
All right, so in eighth place, we had a Naya Beats list, something a little different. Seventh place, an Abzan list. Sixth and fifth place were Mono Red Aggro, which managed to make it farther than the Red White Aggro decks, which is kind of surprising. Fourth place, we have your typical Abzan Aggro list. Third place is an Abzan Whip deck. And all of these decks got beaten out by a pair of green-white devotion decks, which makes me super excited.
Green-white devotion. That had to be the most complicated board state I've ever
seen.
So
I watched clips of the final match of green-white devotion versus green-white devotion, and it looked awful. I think one of the guys, so the deck piloted by Daniel Sacchetti, he got both games, so he 2-0'd it, but the board states were super complicated. I think the other player, Corey, at one point had 100 life and a ton of creatures on board, and he still conceded, and they went to game two.
Yep, so these decks work by powering out Nykthos with your kind of Elvish Mystic, Sylvan Caryatid, Course of Crucifix, Trifecta that's been around forever, and then uses the mana from your Nykthos to power out huge Pelucranosis and Mastery of the Unseen.
MVP.
which is an enchantment that you can pay 3 and a white to manifest the top card of your library. And whenever a permanent you control is turned face up, you gain 1 life for each creature you control. So you pair this with Whisperwood Elemental, and you just have a bunch of manifest tokens out and flip them up for lots and lots of life gain.
Yeah, to give you an idea of how crazy these finals were, I think there was an excerpt where the board states got locked down, and at some point, one of the players had his Temurge Sabertooth out and was monstrousing his Pelucranos for 26, thanks to Nykthos, and then returning it to his hand with Temurge Sabertooth so he could play it and wipe the board again.
That's
ridiculous.
So funny.
Yeah, so these green-white devotion decks showed up and cleaned house at Grand Prix Miami. Exciting stuff.
Yeah. Also, the mono-red aggro lists are kind of interesting that two of them made it into the top eight. And from what I can tell, this deck is only going to get better with the new set. There's a lot of cool mono-red things getting released.
Yeah. What's the name of the new preview card? Spoiler alert.
Zergo Bellbringer.
Yeah, he got demoted.
So 2/2 for 1.
Yeah, and between that and Roast, 5 damage for 2 mana.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fun deck to play.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you have anything else to add before we move to turn two?
No, let's work on turn two.
All right, I'll let you take us to turn two.
Sure. So we're putting together our team, probably called Team Extra Turn. we're getting together a bunch of people from around the area, and we're going to start testing for Grand Prix Charlotte, which is modern. So we made a plan that we're going to test, you know, a couple hours, 2, 3, 4 hours each week, different decks, and we're getting together the meta decks like we've discussed in previous podcasts so that we can play against the field, player decks against the field. So it's not just us jamming a bunch of decks against each other, because that's not really that helpful when it comes to a Grand Prix. So what we wanted to talk about was, when does Magic start to feel like work? So I know in my situation, I just bought a house and got a new job, and I don't really have a whole lot of time for magic right now. And the way we've set this up to me seems a lot like work.
Well, you know, Joe is very, overly ambitious in everything that he does that's related to magic.
For sure.
So the,
for sure.
The list, the schedule that we've set up looks fairly intimidating so far.
Yeah. So basically, we're going to scour the internet for different articles about modern things or magic in general. Post those so everybody can look at them. You have to test a few hours each week. We're going to be tweaking our decks and putting up notes in a Google Doc. So I know, like I said, to me, this seems like a lot of work. So the question comes, is it worth playing? Is it worth doing all this work? Like, what is the payoff for this? Mm-hmm. What do you think, Jonathan?
In my opinion, there is a fine line that you can cross where magic starts becoming less of a fun hobby and more of just more work. I mean, if your payoff is you want to go and make $2,000 in prizes in a Grand Prix and you're spending 20 hours a week preparing, you might consider that work. And so it really depends on what you plan on getting out of playing magic to help you, decide how much you want to play. So for me, I'm for the most part all right with Joe's schedule of wanting to prepare for Charlotte. My overall goal, as I mentioned really way back when we started this podcast, we all had certain things that we were looking to get better at when we started this podcast. Mine was to become a more competitive Magic player. I want to be able to start going to GPs, being able to make day two, finish in the top half, maybe even top eight one day. And so in order for me to achieve those goals, I know that I'll have to put a little bit of extra effort into it. Going to GP Charlotte, doing Modern is going to be a fun format for me. And so right now, the benefits line up with the amount of work that we're going to have to put into to prepare for this GP. But again, it all comes back to, how much or what you plan on getting out of playing Magic and going to these tournaments.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail right on the head. I mean, it all depends on what your goals are. My goal, as always with every GP, is to make day two. That's my goal. I want to make day two in every GP I play at. So I know with my preparation right now, if I were to continue on, just playing Thursday night Magic every week and up until for the next, 12 weeks until the GP, I know that that would not prepare me well enough to day two a Modern mm-hmm. Grand Prix. So I know that I'm going to have to work at it. And this kind of schedule that Joe set up, seems to be as much work as in my head I think it is, it's definitely would be worth it if I could make day two. And it would definitely give me the best chance of making day two at a Grand Prix.
For sure. I have the same problem where most of my modern playtesting casually happens at a Monday night tournament at my local card store, which I haven't been able to go to for the past month or so thanks to schoolwork. So really, getting onto a schedule and getting to play a lot of Magic. One, I miss playing Magic. Two, it's one of the best ways to prepare for the GP.
Yeah, so it comes down to what your goals are. Also, I don't think people play test correctly. So it's not just, like I said, about jamming your decks together. It's also about playing against the field. But not only that, you also want to play properly against the field. Mm-hmm. So with playtesting, we've kind of made this rule that if you come to a point in the game where there's two different decisions that you can make, we make one of them and continue to play out the game. And once that's finished, you kind of rewind the game back to that point and take the other line and see where it ends up. So I think this is a really good way of trying to find the most optimal plays. And that's kind of the idea of playtesting. You want to become more optimal mm-hmm. in your play.
Yeah, you want to know how to best play your deck as well as what an expert player for the other deck is going to end up doing. So all in all, very helpful.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. And if being a more efficient Magic player is one of your goals, then, falls right in line with being worth it playing Magic.
Yeah, for sure. Just play enough for your goals. And if it starts to feel like work, then you have to reanalyze your goals and see what's realistic.
Yep.
Well, let's move on to turn three.
All right.
If you haven't heard, spoiler season is happening for Dragons of Tarkir. Exciting stuff.
So many dragons.
So many dragons. I think Wizards made a joke by accident. They're like, any set with dragon in the name has to have lots and lots of dragons, right?
Yeah.
Somebody on Reddit said, well, what were they thinking 2 years ago with Dragon's Maze?
Yeah, let's see. They had a good phrase on one of their articles. It was, Dragons of Tarkir is the dragoniest dragon-filled dragon that ever dragoned.
It definitely is. There is definitely a lot of dragons in this set so far.
Yeah. Speaking of, we have a couple of dragon-related cards that we are really excited to talk about the previews with you guys. Now that it's, I guess we're into week two, if you're as excited as we are, you've been keeping up with the spoilers of all of these cards. And we have a couple that we would just like to highlight for our listeners. I can go on ahead if you want, Alex.
Yeah, you go first, then I'll go, and then you go, and I'll go. We got
Excellent.
Two each.
Well, the first one, I got really excited when this card got previewed because it fits right into one of my pet decks that I want to be playing in Modern. It is called Ojutai's Command. So in case you haven't heard, extra spoiler, commands are back. One for
Hooray.
Each of the dragon lords. And this one in particular, I'm excited about for my blue-white Modern Delver list. It is an instant. I believe all the commands are instant speed. This one is two colorless, yep. A white and a black. Choose two. Return target creature card with converted mana cost two or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. You gain four life. Counter target creature spell or draw a card. So we have a bunch of powerful options here on this four mana instant spell. And you, of course, you're probably thinking, well, this sounds a lot like Cryptic Command. Well, it's very similar. It is not Cryptic Command. The modes have, I suppose, different uses, but I believe both will be very helpful in a tempo deck such as Delver. The big thing is that one of the modes is you get to draw a card. So for four mana instant speed, you get to draw a card and do something else. So you get to keep replacing cards. And just, I mean, the modes are really good. Being able to gain four life against aggro decks is good. Being able to, you can still counter draw, although in this case it has to counter a creature spell, which is, so it's not, you know, quite as powerful as Command.
Not as useful.
Yeah, from, in that respect. Mana cost is better though. Easy. And I really like the thought of being stuck on 8 mana and just Ojutai's Command to draw a card and return a Snapcaster Mage to the battlefield.
Yeah, that seems pretty strong. I think that's pretty much the only part that mode says. It says return target Snapcaster to the battlefield.
Yes, I cannot wait. Alex, your turn.
So I also have a command that is probably my favorite card in the set right now. If you didn't know, I've been playing Burn recently, and this one really struck the right chord with me. It's a Tarka's Command. Same thing, choose two out of four. The mana cost is red, green, so two converted mana cost. Choose two. Your opponents can't gain life this turn. A Tarka's Command deals three damage to each opponent. You may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield, and creatures you control get +1/+1 and gain reach until end of turn. So this card is absolutely perfect for Burn. It does all the thing that Burn wants to do. It deals three damage, which is pretty standard in Burn. You want to be dealing damage. And it gets around Leyline of Sanctity since it's each opponent.
Oh, that's true.
The other one is your opponents can't gain life this turn. This is the bane of Burn. Life gain is hard to deal with when you're playing Burn. So this card is really useful in that aspect. It kind of gives you a reminder of Skullcrack. Although it doesn't give you the other clause of damage can't be prevented. But the life gain is more important anyway of those. The other one is creatures you control get +1/+1 and gain reach until end of turn. Reach, not really important when you're attacking, but if you can pump up your team and get a swift spear prowess trigger for your swift spear at the same time and pump up your team and deal three damage, I mean, this is perfect for Burn.
That sounds pretty brutal, and it's only two mana?
Yeah, it's only
two
mana.
So you would be willing to splash green in your mono-red Burn deck?
It's not mono-red, so I've already been splashing green for Destructive Revelry in the sideboard because Destructive Revelry is just so efficient. So it's really not, you maybe add one more green source in there and then put these main deck, and now you're just playing red, white, green, Burn.
Sounds good.
You have another card for us?
I do, and this card got previewed today, and I really want to build the decks that were suggested in the article that this was previewed in. So this was an article written by Gavin Verney in Reconstructed, and he has previewed the enchantment called Assault Formation. It costs one colorless and one green, and has a line of text that has only been ever printed on one other card, Doran the Siege Tower. Each creature you control assigns combat damage equal to its toughness rather than its power. In addition to that, it has two other abilities. You can pay one green to have target creature with Defender be able to attack that turn, and then the second ability for two colorless and a green, creatures you control get +0/+1 until end of turn. So it's Doran in enchantment form. And also,
sort of, it's half.
Yeah, Doran. Plus a Glorious Anthem effect. Plus,
yes, because Doran makes all creatures assign their combat damage equal to the toughness.
Yes. So that is very important. So in that aspect, Assault Formation could be considered better. It just can't sweep five. It depends on both things.
Yeah, because it doesn't like cancel out anything like Cradle Plating, which Doran does.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it gives it +X/+0. Cradle Plating gives it +X/+0. So
yeah.
But I mean, if you have a bunch of big toughness creatures, what are you
right,
worried
you
about?
You should be up. So I won't go into the standard deck that he mentioned, but I will go and talk a tiny bit about the modern deck that I'm tempted to put this in. So Doran is modern legal. Assault Formation is now modern legal. People have tried to build Doran Treefolk decks before, but they just weren't quite up to snuff. But being able to play both in the same deck could prove profitable. You play a bunch of Tarmogoyfs, some Siege Rhinos, Siege Towers, Mana Dorks, Treefolk Harbinger, and then you have
Treefolk.
Yeah, that's right. For your one Murmuring Bosk. And so here's the crazy thing. This deck can win on turn 3. Who cares about Splinter Twin? You can go turn 1 Mana Dork, turn 2 Doran the Siege Tower, turn 3 play a Mardu Ascendancy, and swing for exactly 20.
Yeah, that seems pretty
strong.
Yeah,
so I'm excited about this.
Sounds like a fun deck, for sure. All right, so my next card is Avatar of the Resolute. This was also spoiled today. And it goes in another one of our decks, the $40 green deck that I think Joe did a deck tech on, if you want to hear about that. So it's 2 mana, green. It's a 3/2 reach trample. And it enters the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter on it for each other creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it. So this works really, really well alongside your Experiment One, alongside Stranglerout Geist, alongside
Scavenging Ooze.
Scavenging Ooze, that was the one I'm looking for. I mean, this card is just like pure value, basically. I mean, it's already like strictly better than one of the other cards that was possibly play that in that Garruk's Companion, which was a 3/2 trample for 2 mana. So this card already replaces that one and can even get bigger than that.
Yeah, it's great. I think this card is going to make that $40 green deck, you know, 3 times better. It's synergistic, it aids devotion, and it's a 3/2, possibly a 4/3, possibly a 5/4 for 2 mana.
Yeah, I mean, this card is pretty cool for that green deck for sure, and it adds 2 to devotion.
Yeah, excellent. Well, we have so many other cards that we would like to talk about with these spoilers, but we wanted to highlight just a couple of our favorites for now. Hopefully there are more goodies to come. I guess we'll move on to turn 4.
Sure.
All right, I'll leave this one to you.
Sure. So as we speak, you won't see this. This will be way after this podcast comes out. But right now, Vintage Super League is happening because it's past 9 o'clock on a Tuesday night. If you haven't heard of Vintage Super League, it's kind of what it sounds like. It's a vintage tournament that they play every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock, 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, where they play vintage. It's awesome. So you have the best players in the world. So this is like your LSV and Randy Buehler and Kai Buda are all in this. Eric Froelich, like all the best Magic players in the world are all getting together and doing the most broken things Magic can do all at once. It's actually very entertaining to watch. Even if you don't play Vintage or care about Vintage or anything like that, it's actually worth a watch. They post all the videos after the fact too on YouTube. They do a really good job with it. It's actually very entertaining, and they do commentary on it and tell you what the decks are trying to do so that you, even if you've never played Vintage, you can kind of understand. I know the first couple times I watched, I have, and I still do, I still look up cards on Gatherer to make sure I know what they're actually trying to do. But basically, they're just doing a bunch of broken things, and the best players of Magic are doing them. It's quite fun, and I think you should definitely take a look if you haven't yet.
Excellent. Yeah. I mean, if anything, it's great to watch just to see the types of interactions and plays that these pro level players do. Next level stuff.
Yeah, it's totally different. It's totally different than any other format. It's sometimes like this season, there was two turn one wins, which you'd think would be very common in Vintage, but actually turn one wins are very rare. Most of these games last like an hour. Our matches last like an hour. So it's not like this kind of broken Vintage like thought in your head that's like, oh, everything's turn one or two win. The decks are very interactive and it's very interesting to watch.
All right. Well, maybe we'll report on the Vintage Super League after it's all said and done here on the podcast.
All right. So more spoilers?
Yeah. Who doesn't like spoilers? All right. So turn five, Magic Origins is coming out this summer. And everybody is excited about it. Planeswalkers, origin stories, not planeswalkers, becoming planeswalkers. We get to see their home planes and their first planes that they planeswalk to once their spark ignites and figure out what drives each of these five characters that Magic the Gathering wants to highlight. So I believe this set is centered on one planeswalker for each color. We have Gideon Jura, Jace, Liliana, Chandra, and Nissa. And we know some things about these planeswalkers, but for the most part, their backstories are shrouded in mystery. And we know that Wizards really wants to make the planeswalkers and their history be the central piece of the set. So we, of course, being true Magic fans, want to speculate needlessly on what this set's going to talk about. Wizards has hinted at some stuff already. If you haven't caught it, it's on Wizards page now for you to look or to play through the hour-long PAX East panel that happened last week. I don't know if you got to watch that, Alex.
I saw some of the spoilers from
Okay.
it.
I ended up watching...
Lots and lots
yes,
of spoilers.
Yes, there was good stuff. I ended up watching the whole thing except for the question and answer section. But
sure.
They showed some cool stuff about the duels game that's going to come out with Magic Origins. And then, of course, some card spoilers. The one big card spoiler is not Jace, but the other iconic Magic Planeswalker, Liliana.
Liliana, yeah. This is so cool.
Yeah, so Magic has gone back to, wait for it, the transform mechanic to highlight when these legendary creatures in their storyline ignited their spark and became Planeswalkers. So I guess I'll go on ahead and talk about this card. It's Liliana, Heretical Healer. She's a 2/3 lifelinking creature for 3 mana, 1 colorless, 2 black. And whenever another non-token creature you control dies, you exile her, return her to the battlefield transformed, and then put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield. And then now you have a different card, Liliana, Defiant Necromancer. She has now become a planeswalker and does Liliana things. She has 3 loyalty, and her first ability is +2. Each player discards a card. No surprises there. Then -X, return target non-legendary creature card with converted mana cost X or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Then finally, her ultimate at -8 is you get an emblem with, quote, whenever a creature dies, return it to the battlefield under your control at the beginning of the next end step, unquote. So you,
yeah, it seems pretty
yeah,
strong.
Creatures never die. And she's a solid creature anyways, even if you never get to transform her. So.
Yeah, a 2/3 for 3 with lifelink in black is already pretty fantastic.
And it's not that hard to transform her, really.
No, For sure. You can kill anything.
And I mean, even with the exploit mechanic coming out, it's going to be really easy to flip your Lilianas.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even like this even like you could take advantage of the legend rule. And if you have two Lilianas out, then one flips because one gets killed. You could also save your Liliana from removal by killing something else and flipping her. Like, this is pretty neat. It's a pretty neat mechanic.
I didn't think about that. That's good. So yeah, so they spoiled a little bit about Liliana and talked about her storyline in the PAX East panel. I encourage you to take a look at that section. In addition, they talked a little bit about Gideon Jura, for example. Did you know that Gideon originated on Theros?
Which is kind of surprising to me, since he wasn't on Theros when we went there.
Yeah.
A year ago?
I guess so. A year and some change. Yeah, he wasn't featured in the storyline at all. But it kind of makes sense, given his, I guess, demeanor and dress and everything. He would be from that plane.
Yeah, for sure.
Not much on the other planeswalkers. There's some sort of story with Chandra that they highlighted. They played a really cool video that you should try and find online if you can, featuring some of the planeswalkers. Maybe we can post that video to our Facebook page, Extra Turns.
Yeah,
Facebook.
Definitely. We can definitely do that.
cool. Is there anything?
So also there was some Modern Masters cards spoiled for those of you who care about Modern Masters, like me. I'm super excited.
For the PAX East panel? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So they spoiled that Karn Liberated is going to be in the set, which honestly doesn't surprise me a whole lot. I figured they would after they spoiled Evercool. I figured there'd be some sort of like colorless theme, and I assume they're going to spoil the other like big Eldrazi.
Yeah, probably. Now we can all build Tron.
Hooray! But the most important spoiler was Tarmogoyf. Tarmogoyf is coming back.
Maybe it'll be $150 this time.
Yeah, how low is it going to dip before it shoots up to $300?
I don't know. I mean, both versions are sitting at 200 now, so who knows?
I hope that they print more of the set.
They are printing more, but they're not printing it as much as a regular set still, I believe.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which is unfortunate. But so it's between...
Either way, it's exciting.
So many spoilers. 'Tis the season.
Oh, also, more spoilers. We're returning to Zendikar after Magic Origins.
Yes, it is Battle for Zendikar.
What is it called? Battle for Zendikar.
Yeah, and so, the planeswalker heading that preview was Gideon. Is that right?
I believe
it was Gideon. It was featured in the video they previewed. So he'll be in the storyline somehow, trying to save Zendikar.
Well, that seems pretty interesting. We'll have to keep an eye on that.
We will.
For sure.
All right. Well, I guess that's about all we have here for you guys at Extra Turns. Do you have anything else to add, Alex?
No. Hopefully everybody gets better so we can have more people on the cast.
Yeah, I know. We're not used to doing this without our faithful co-host, Joe.
Yeah, no kidding. It's kind of weird without Joe. If the host is showing around.
Right.
So where can they find us, Coburn?
You can find all of this at facebook.com/extraturns. Or tweet us at extraturnscast, or as always, email us at extraturnspodcast@gmail.com. With that, you guys enjoyed another podcast from us. As always, have fun, play some magic.
And try not to go into extra turns.